Hello, and welcome to Landward, Readings of Place and Season. I'm Catherine Young. I live, farm, and write in Richland County in the Driftless area of Wisconsin. Today I'll be reading the part of a chapter from my memoir of place, Black Diamonds, A Childhood Colored by Coal. The memoir looks back on my childhood in Scranton, Pennsylvania in the 1960s, a coal-strewn and ashen place, and it contrasts that landscape with the 1856 pastoral and verdant landscape painting, The Lackawanna Valley by George Innes. Today's reading is an excerpt from the chapter called Dioramas. I am fascinated by museums and what we choose to display. In my coal mining city, we had a fabulous museum in the park, and nearby, another exhibit, a very strange one, underground. In this scene, the child narrator and her mother have walked to the park across the gorge because the mother doesn't drive. I'm going to make note that there's a mention of colors that are fluorescent on rocks in one of the exhibits. This is in the early 1960s, when there were no fluorescent colors in clothing or packaging or in crayons or coloring tools, because the colors were made from coal dyes. Just a few years later, there were brand new colors made from petroleum as the use of coal began to wane. From Black Diamonds, A Childhood Colored by Coal, an excerpt from the chapter Dioramas. The afternoon in Naog Park is unbearably hot. Being in the pool so long makes me tired, and I'm not ready for the long walk home. When we reach the shade trees in the park behind the Everhart Museum, I ask, "Can we go in?" "To the museum?" "Okay, only for a little while." We climb the stone steps to the heavy front doors, lean back, and pull to enter a delicious coolness. I feel such happiness walking the white terrazzo floor in the quiet lobby. The hush of the museum falls over us, a hush of importance, different from church hush or library hush. And unlike the lobbies of downtown buildings, the museum is clean and filled with light. "Where do you want to go?" Mama asks. I lead her to the place where we always start, a small hall right near the entry. Glass cases on the floor display slabs of coal and coal fossils bigger than dinner plates. The walls are decorated with paintings of scaly trees topped with fronds. The trees overlook a tangle of ferny greenery throughout which huge dragonflies soar. The dragonflies are beautiful but frightening because they're so big. The trees look odd because they don't have normal branches. "Those trees look so strange. They're from a long time ago. Tree ferns." We look at the different kinds of coal, lignite, bituminous and anthracite, and huge slabs of coal with shiny black fossil imprints of leaves and sometimes ridges that look like tire tracks. "Where did the fossils come from?" "I don't know, probably from a mine." As we leave the hall, we pass a sculpture of a coal miner carved from anthracite. Beneath his helmet and headlamp, his face is etched with deep lines. "Coal art," Mama says, shaking her head. "So strange. Why would anyone do that?" I look at his face. It's drawn and hollowed out. He looks like the men we see everywhere. Mama takes me to the basement to look at the exhibits of minerals and the exhibit of living bees. Their buzzing bodies cover a wax comb sandwiched between two layers of glass that vibrate. A river of honeybees fills a glass tube that leads outdoors, but it's a two-way river with bees heading out crawling over returning sisters. The honeybee exhibit is the only part of the Everhart that has something living. The bee tube is a tunnel like a mine, only it's bees, and they don't mine coal. They mine nectar, or maybe sunshine. On the second floor, we look at artwork, paintings of people and places in our valley long ago. We sigh over the beautiful collection of Dorflinger and Tiffany cut glass that was made in furnaces in neighboring valleys and which graced the tables of the very wealthy. Oh, how I love the sparkles of light on the cut glass. I wish my family had them on fancy tables. Maybe then we could dress up at the table and have maids, like in the stories and books. Mama and I go back downstairs to a black-walled room. A bench faces a glass case where large rocks are displayed in tiers. Mama lets me touch a switch on the exhibit, and the lights in the glass case turn on. Then the lights in the room go out, except for an ultraviolet light over the rocks. The crusty fluorescent coatings on the rocks glow strange, bright colors, pink, purple, green, colors we never see anywhere else, not in our clothing, not even in the brightest flowers or in paintings. The plain room lights come back on. We touch the switch again and watch the colors change and change back. "Come on," says Mama. "Please, Mama, just one more time." I'm drawn to the strangeness and the beauty of the colors, and each time the regular case lights come on, I try to see where the hidden colors live on the rocks, but I can't. Before I can memorize the patterns, the lights change again. Mama doesn't understand that I want to see them so that I can look for rocks like these on our mountain. "One more time? Let's go see the bird room." Mama heads out. Rows and rows of glass and dark stained wood cabinets taller than us fill the room. Mama lets me wander as I wish, and I visit the large dioramas set in each of the room's four corners. Each is a window into a different wilderness landscape. I'm drawn to the marshland scene where red-winged blackbirds cling atop painstakingly puffed-out cattails. The red and yellow patches on the blackbird's wings sing out over the amber colors in the exhibit case. I wish I could climb right into the diorama. "Mama, where is that?" "It says Pennsylvania Marsh." "Could we find one?"
"Find one what?"
"A place like it?" Mama considers this for a moment. "It would be by water. A pond or something." She shakes her head. "There'd only be water like that in the flats by the river. The column dumps are in the flats by the river. That's where the collieries and breakers are. No cattails there." She holds out her hand. "Come on." Mama goes around a case and calls to me. "Come see this one," she says. Mama stands before a bird that is dove-like, with a fabulous long, jewel-colored teal and maroon tail. His glass eyes, encircled by tiny white rings, make him seem sweet. "Passenger pigeon," Mama reads to me from the card in the glass case. "They're all gone," she says quietly. "We won't ever see them again. They told us in school. They've gone extinct."
"Why?"
"I don't know. I think they were shot. Hunted? For food, maybe? I can't remember. It's a terrible loss."
"But can't we find one in the woods?"
"They're gone." On the way out of the museum, we pass the coal fossils. Fern trees, extinct. Giant dragonflies, extinct. Like dinosaurs, like the coal-burning steam locomotives that used to run all through the valley that I never got to see. Gone. Back outdoors, we walk behind the museum, among trees and past a railway car from the 1850s, sitting on a short set of rails. A passenger car from the time of the gravity railroads, the first railroads to move coal. There's a mine, too, in the other part of the park, by the black rocks below the picnic area, a place we don't go to very much.
"Mama, can we go see the mine?"
"The Brooks Mine?"
Mama hesitates before answering. I don't know if it's open. Please, Mama. We walk to the picnic grounds and come to a tunnel opening set in a wall of layered black rock. The iron gates are swung away from the entrance. Mama and I walk down the coal-covered path holding hands. We step just inside the entrance and are met with a cold draft of bitter coal-odored air. Mama stops and listens to see if anyone else is inside. I begin shivering. We can't go in there alone, she says. We'll wait until your dad can come with us. Dad comes on a rare summer Sunday when his rotating firefighting schedule gives him a break. Because we're with him, we go to the park by car. Mama and Dad dress up as if we're going to the next town to visit relatives. Dad in a short-sleeved button-down shirt, and he even wears Brill Cream in his hair. Mama puts on one of her flowered full dresses and has pulled back her graying curls to show her pearly clip-on earrings. They let me wear shorts. On Sundays, the park is full of families with their dads instead of just mamas and kids. The day feels so special with the three of us together, just like other families. Mama, Dad, and I walk down the path to the mine's dark opening. It's set right into the tilted coal layers that lie below the picnic area. Is this a real coal mine?
No, it's just for looking, Dad answers.
Hand in hand, we enter and walk between a set of rails. Though a dim trail of caged light bulbs overhead guides the way, the tunnel slopes gradually, curving, pulling us into darkness. There's a heaviness and a chill. We do not speak. The only sounds in the mine are our footsteps crunching on coal, echoing, and water dripping somewhere. We travel downslope, hesitating. We listen for something. Other people visiting, or maybe creatures. Perhaps rats. The darkness thickens. For a few moments, we can't see what is ahead or behind us. I squeeze my parents' hands, and they squeeze back gently to let me know they're paying attention. Ahead in the yellowish light, we see an eerie scene. In an alcove, two mannequins stand in miners' helmets and clothing, a man and a boy. They stand beside a shaggy mule attached to a massive wooden coal cart filled with huge chunks of anthracite. Leaning against the coal cart are tools, pickaxe, shovel, and lantern. I look at the coal cart, but I'm afraid to look up at the mannequins. They're so very different from the mannequins in downtown store windows. They look more like people who froze in place. Their clothing is filthy, and shaggy hair peeks out from beneath the miners' helmets. Smudges of coal dust mark their faces. The yellowed light casts a brownish gleam on the walls of coal around them. For a few moments we're silent, as if we've approached some kind of altar where statues of saints in alcoves would look peacefully out at us. But this is dark and creepy. Even in the dim light, I can see that the mule is missing patches of fur. The boy's clothes are dirty and torn. I can't take my eyes off him. I whisper to my parents, "Why is there a boy in here?" Dad answers, "Boys worked in mines. They took care of mules." "Are there still boys in mines?"
"No, not anymore."
"Come here." Dad takes my hand and leads me beyond the mannequins to a room carved from the coal off to the right. We face a huge pillar carved of coal. Dad takes me on the dimly lit pathway around the pillar, walking quickly. The mine floor tilts crazily downward. Following the narrow curving path with only coal walls on either side of us, we feel as if we're on some strange amusement park ride. Then the floor gradually tilts back up as we reach the miner mannequins. Mama waits for us, her arms tightly crossed. She quickly takes my hand. We talk in whispers as we head out of the tunnel, our steps quicker than when we came in.
"Are there still people in a mine?"
Yep, there are miners.
Do they stay in the mines?
They live in houses, but there aren't so many miners as there used to be.
Why not?
Well, there aren't so many mines as there used to be. Not everyone heats with coal anymore. In the distance, we can hear the muffled echoes of other families, and it sounds strange to hear people again. At the mine's opening, we enter back into the summer day, blinking at the sunlight, breathing warm summer air, feeling as if we've gone on a very long journey. You have been listening to an excerpt from the chapter Dioramas from the book Black Diamonds, A Childhood Colored by Coal by Catherine Young, published in 2023 by Torrey House Press. This is Catherine Young for Landward. Thanks for listening. Podcasts of this reading will be available at wdrt.org.